I'm joined by Victoria and Emily. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Now, we had very sad news that unfortunately Pebble is no longer with us. Pebble went missing a few weeks ago and we did put an appeal out because I know there was a £10,000 reward because she's a much loved pet of yours. So what happened to Pebble? Can you give us a sort of background of when she went missing? What happened?
So maybe I'll answer this question because I was actually the one who was looking after her at the time. It was Thursday, the 11th of March, we'd actually just moved into our new house the day before, so it was an area that, although she knows Isha, it was not, she didn't know my new house. So I put her on the floor. I just walked into the house, put her down. I then went to go and I noticed that the door being left open because we have builders and plumbers coming in and out the house at the moment, or we did at the time, and we're having a bit of work done. And so she got a bit spooked. She was a nervous dog around lots of people. I think it's probably the case for a lot of lockdown dogs. So she got a bit spooked by the number of people, ran out the house. I then obviously followed her out the house. She was actually sort of just walking around outside the house for a little while, and I was obviously so conscious that she was so nervous. And then ironically, there were actually some Thames Water people working on a sewage pipe just outside the house. They obviously saw that, she wasn't with me and I was calling her name. They approached her and that's when she bolted. Obviously, they weren't to know that she was going to get freaked out by them. But so then that's where we lost her. She ran from my house, which is near Claremont School, all the way through Esher, the High Street, all the way down Moor Lane, past Sandown Golf, the race course, up onto Farm Road, and then was last seen running into the sewage works at 2:30 p.m. by two members of the public who actually had followed her from Sandown in their car. And saw her run into the sewage works because obviously the fence, the sewage works, she can get under, and obviously in their cars they couldn't, so they then were stood at the gate trying to ring the buzzer to be allowed in, but they saw her just running straight into the sewage works through the blue gates, which is where the restricted area is. They were then allowed in. They actually didn't realize that the blue gates were restricted, so they ran straight through. And then the site manager stopped them. And that's obviously then when they lost sight of her in the sewage works. We then arrived, because obviously I then got in the car, and we arrived about 10 minutes later because we'd been so many people saw her running through Isha. Obviously it's there was lots of people around. We got there about 10 minutes after the two members of the public that were the last ones to see her run in. And when we arrived, they were still waiting by the blue gates because the site manager wouldn't let them in. After lots of begging, the site manager did eventually say to Victoria and I, we were allowed to follow him in his car, as he drove around the site. So obviously, we jumped at the chance to do that. And obviously then when we were, when we then did that, he allowed us for about 10 minutes, didn't he, Victoria? And that just wasn't clearly enough time to search the huge, vast area that is Thames Water. And obviously we were in our car as well, and she's a tiny little dog. And at this point, because he was also showing us how there are gaps around the fence, around the whole site. So he was trying to kind of say to us,
she wouldn't have been there, she would have got out. There wasn't a chance that she would have been staying in there. She would have just ran straight through, was what he was saying to us. And we were obviously none the wiser. And we were taking anything. We thought maybe he knew better than us. And we thought, we'll search all around. So that's what we then spent the next, well, until gone past midnight, we were out until searching all around the area. We did then have one more chance because we managed to speak to someone who lived on Farm Road, who works at another site in Hampton Court, and he said that he would try and get us access. He was obviously desperate to help us find Pebble as well. And he allowed us onto the site, and we did the same thing that we did with the site manager, but with this gentleman that lived on Farm Road. And we were able to stay on there for a little bit longer. We were there for about, what was it? Probably about 20, 25 minutes maximum. But again, by this point, we obviously did the same route that we'd done earlier that day, which was just follow the road round. It was just obviously we had to stay on the path and not really knowing how vast or where there were all lots of different areas or any disused parts of the sites, of the site even. And so unfortunately we then had no luck and we had to leave, which was about 5 p.m. I think we left on the Thursday the 11th.
Oh no, I was gonna say, yeah, that was like the second visit. So we were allowed kind of two stints of, like, the first one was, you know, 10, 15 minutes, and the second one was 20 minutes later on in the day. And I think the first one was so short was because they all clock off, I think, at 3 p.m. Obviously not at the time, we didn't really realize that. We thought, you know, he was saying it's health and safety, you have to leave, and we thought that meant they were then going to do a search themselves at the site, because that he'd said, don't worry, you know, we have had this happen before, people, you know, dogs run onto the site, you know, we'll make sure we search everywhere. And we were kind of then led to believe that that's what would be done.
It almost and then gives a false sense of hope, really, that, oh, okay, it's great, they've got a team of people that are well practiced in this area, with having dogs come onto their site. So we thought, okay, we've got extra people wanting to help, and they're going to do that. But obviously that wasn't the case.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They obviously, you had thought they're going to make people aware and to keep an eye out. Did you get any indication from them that they had asked their staff to keep an eye out for a small dog as well? Because as you're saying, it's a vast area, a really dangerous place for anybody to be. Hence why, you know, you guys had to be supervised when you were there as well. So, you know, I would have thought they'd have been putting out some to their staff to please look out for a description of your dog, but that doesn't seem to be the case at all.
I mean, unfortunately, we can't really say what happened. Obviously, we only spoke to the one gentleman, the site manager. Never at any other point did we speak to anyone else because we weren't allowed to. But we did on a number of occasions. I bought biscuits on many times to try and, you know, encourage them. We obviously said that there was a huge reward. Please don't, you know, can you hang up this poster that we've got to please look for her, and, you know, trying to give them any incentive to really encourage them to search.
We also put up posters on the fences outside, so, you know, they should have been aware even if they hadn't alerted the staff themselves. Like, we tried to make them aware. It was just an awful then suddenly. You know, we were just continually denied access the whole time, because obviously as days go on and there were no other sightings of her outside of the site, we were convinced that she had to still be in there. Or, you know, we then started to believe that because there'd been absolutely no sightings and Thames Water were being so kind of difficult and unhelpful, you know, people were suggesting that maybe, you know, one of their staff members have stolen her. So that's when we started to think, well, you know, maybe she was stolen, because, you know, everything goes through your mind at this point. You know, we've never lost a dog before. We've had grown up having dogs, and people tell you all this, you know, tell you all these different things that could be happening. But because the lead always went cold at the sewage works, you know, that was always where we kept coming back to, like, either, you know, she's got to still be in there, or, you know, someone's picked her up working in the sewage works, because it just makes sense that there's nothing else, you know, no other leads. And we had members of the public tell us that they've heard barking and crying, and it's such a noisy site, honestly. Like the few times that we were allowed, you know, very limited access onto the site, it's so noisy. So the fact that people said they could hear a dog made us think, was, you know, she's obviously really trying to, you know, people are trying to, she's trying to get contact, because it's so noisy to hear her above the machines, which also then makes no sense that they kept saying they've not heard anything or seen anything. It just, they must have just not been looking if members of the public outside of the site managed to hear something. And even Victoria, her, you know, you were camping out at like 3 a.m. You even heard her.
Which I was, and I was with 2 other people as well, and we all heard. I think that was the more infuriating part, is that we provided all this evidence to the site manager to say, please, can you look? We did also, they did allow us to put a thermal drone above. And in that point, there were points where thermal images came up, but even then he wouldn't go look in that area. But we're like, what more evidence do you need? If we're telling you there's barking, there's a thermal image showing that there's an animal in there, and you're saying to us that you won't go look, how what more can we give? And I think that the most upsetting of all is that we know from the post-mortem that she didn't die from drowning, which is obviously where she was found. She was found in a well, but she didn't actually die that way. It's believed that she died either from starvation or hypothermia, which means that she was alive for days, if not weeks, on the site, which just even more infuriating of how there were so many times that Thames Water could have rectified the situation and could have saved her, and they didn't.
Yeah, and really traumatic for you as well, particularly if you could hear her and instead you could see her on a thermal imaging. So, I mean, what can Thames Water do? Want to sort of, I guess, apologise to you guys, but mainly what can they do going forward so that doesn't happen again? Because it obviously sounds like it's a very easy site for dogs, cats, or a manner of animals to access. And this isn't going to be a sort of first instance by the sound of things. It could happen very, very easily again.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not the first time either. We have become aware that there's another dog that was found on dead on that site as well. So no, it is definitely a very dangerous site, and it is very easy for animals of all shapes and sizes to get in there. And unfortunately, it is also really, any children are able to get onto there as well. We were made aware that there are holes in the fences for any size human as well. And that I signed up that show that the site is as dangerous that you have to be guided around the site. So really going forward, the reason why we're sort of making sure that everyone knows this story is that we want Thames Water to make a change. If they have this such a dangerous site that has these open wells that they can't obviously get access to them because it's an old site, they should be closed, or there should be adequate fencing that means that nothing, no child, no dog, no cat, no fox can get in there, which is obviously not the case at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. As you say, very, very scary to think that a child could also easily get into there. And I mean, you'd hope that the search was even more thorough in that sort of instance. But again, if they got stuck in these open wells, they're so dangerous, so easy to topple into it, and then a whole different story, really.
Yeah, because I think the problem with the disused wells is that they're, because they've not been maintained for years, there's all this overgrowth covering them. So, you know, dogs are smart animals. Pebble was a smart dog. She wouldn't have intentionally run into the river or run into open water, but you can't see the water because they're covered in overgrowth. So she was obviously thinking she was running into a bush, and she was not. She was running into, what we think happened is she ran in, and there's a rim around the edge of the well, and she fell into the rim, which is why she obviously then was trapped rather than she died of drowning, because she was not in water, initially immersed in water. She was in the rim where there was no water, and obviously, but she was so small, she couldn't get out. But again, yeah, there shouldn't be these areas of where there's holes and water that people can fall in without being alerted to the fact that they're there. And you can't see that they're there. And I think, like, even before you get to changing the fencing and the wells, there should just be a policy in place that when something like this happens, there's like an escalation process. So the site manager wasn't able to check on day one, but suddenly 20 days later, when we emailed the CEO and escalated it to a point where senior management were involved, which we just wish we'd done on day one, he then was able to go in and check. So why there can't be a process that says, you know, if this happens, the site manager doesn't have authorization to allow a search, but if you go and email X, Y, and Z or speak to X, Y, and Z, then it can be done. I think that was just the most upsetting thing. It was just so inconsistent to say that, oh, it's a health and safety issue, that these areas can't be checked. But then on the day it happened, and every single day up to the 20 days, but then suddenly it was not so dangerous to be checked. So the only thing that happened within those 20 days was that we just caused more and more fuss. And, you know, in hindsight, we just kick ourselves for not raising it sooner. But it just, you know, when it shouldn't have come to us to have had the nous to do that. There should be a process in place. They know the site like the back of their hand. They know which areas they do and do not search, and areas that are dangerous and not. You know, we don't. They should have had a process in place that says, you know, this is where she could, and this is, you know, where we can't search. But if you speak to these people, this is how we can allow a search. We also spoke to, you know, we got the police, the RSPCA, and the fire brigade all involved, who have the equipment to go in and search dangerous areas, and they were ready to go in. You know, they were happy to go in, but Thames Water kept saying no, it's too dangerous for them, and because it's private land, you know, we didn't have a warrant, they can't go in. So they were, but suddenly on the day that when we caused enough fuss, the site manager said, oh, you know, the RSPCA and the fire brigade can all come in. But obviously he went in first, because it only took him less than 20 minutes to find and recover her body. So then obviously we didn't need them. But again, it's just so inconsistent that every day before that point, it was too dangerous. And then suddenly it wasn't too dangerous, which I think is just the most upsetting thing as well. And I think had there just been some sort of policy in place to say, okay, right, this, and if it's as it's happened before, you'd have thought that there should be a policy in place, because it's happened before, so you should have already have, you know, devised something to say, if this does happen again, this is how we're going to handle it. But they haven't.
Yeah, you'd have thought the RSPCA would have been sort of on standby. If they turn up and say, yes, we can come and search, then they've got a process as how that would be done safely and who could supervise them, whereas that doesn't seem to be the case. And once you had them there, that's suddenly when they were galvanised into action. So, or something like a movement sensor. I mean, obviously it can't be too sensitive or else it would be going off all the time, but you'd hope that they'd have something that wouldn't necessarily raise an alarm that locals can hear, but maybe alert something on a device and saying, look, you know, there's something in, I don't know, grid, whatever, of the site that's moving constantly. Well, we've had it moving around for an hour or so. We need to go and check it out. So, yeah, I mean, there are obviously lots of things that should be done and could be done. We are going to have a chat with Thames Water and see what they come back with for you as well. But really sorry to hear the tale of what's happened to Pebble from everybody here, and wishing you the very best with sort of things going forwards.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much.
Really appreciate it. It is a very hard time for sure, and really missing her every day.